Welcome to Women in WP, a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Welcome to episode 21 of Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
And I'm Amy Masson.
Our guest today is Amy Hall.
Hi.
Amy is referred to as the MacGyver of MailChimp. For the last 10 years, Amy has been taking content management out of the hands of business owners who are already busy juggling too many tasks. And she's mostly in her element when showing meetups and WordPress users how to optimize their forms, perfect their lead generation, and make their WordPress sites perform, which makes me just want to come to all of your meetups. We'd like to start off by asking each guest to tell us a bit about their journey into WordPress. How did you get started?
It's bizarre. I'll preface it with that. So I worked for a self-development company, a guy named James Ray, and he killed three people in a sweat lodge. So I knew two of the people that died. And so obviously my job went away. And my husband was developing at the time, and he said, just come work with me while you're healing from this whole trauma, because he did not handle it well. And it turned out that I was actually better at it than he was, at least the marketing arm of it. And so it turned into my business.
That is so amazing that a tragedy led you to WordPress. I think that's our first tragedy to WordPress
story
that we've heard. In terms of then learning WordPress, what were the things that helped you the most in being able to do that?
First off, was my husband. He was just, he took a lot of time with me. And then I just started going to WordCamps. I went to the very first San Diego WordCamp because Matt Mullenweg was there. And like going to that, I was totally hooked. And so I've just been a ton of WordCamps. I usually go to 5 WordCamps a year because I'm lucky. I live in Southern California, so we have a lot of WordCamps in this area. So I can drive to a lot of them. And then I started flying to them. So I went to, we did drive to this one too. I went to Atlanta this year. Best WordCamp. It was awesome. Such a good WordCamp. And we drove to Atlanta and then drove back. And I go to Seattle WordCamp because my grandkids live up there. So I go visit them. So it's WordCamps, meetup. I was going to the Orange County Women Who WordPress meetup and the Orange County regular WordPress meetup for a long time. I took care of my dad for 2 years before he passed. And then, so I just was hanging out with those people up there and meetups. And it was just, there's so much that you can learn at those meetups. I mean, it's the best place. Better don't Google, just go to a meetup.
So you said your husband was developing. Was he a freelancer? Did he have an agency? Was he working for a company? How did that work? And how did you integrate into that system?
So he and a friend developed a networking, it was called Networking Event Finders, and they developed a network of 60 blog sites that were like a blog site for each city, and people could put their networking events on this blog site. So there were 60 blogs that he developed. And after he was doing all that, actually it was before multi-site, and then he got to be like, now he's a multi-site expert because of that. And he just happenstance started doing WordPress development because people kept on contacting him and go, hey, this is great. Can you help me with this? So that's how he got into it. He fell into it also. It was just a joint venture with a friend. So he didn't do an agency. He wasn't freelance, I guess, then.
So if we were to hit you up for advice in terms of the marketing piece that you like to focus on, what do you feel like are the top mistakes that people make with their forms or improvements they could make to them?
So the things that I see on a consistent basis are there are no call to actions on the front page of a site, and a subscription form is in the bottom, or it's a little button at the top, or there is no subscription form at all. So that's, and my husband and I have a saying, it's websites for show, email for dough. What that means is you have to have a website. It needs to be a beautiful website that users can actually use, but it's for them to see you because it's going to take a lot of touches for them to hire you. And then if you send out emails on a regular basis, they're going to get that interaction with you. They're going to know you, like you, and trust you, and then they're going to purchase from you. So whether they actually purchase from the email or if they go back to your site after they've gotten a few emails and purchase, that's what I mean by for dough.
Well, I have a lot of clients that, you know, when we set up their website, they have their, you know, newsletter sign up and we put it in, but then they don't really nurture it. They don't really do anything to get people to sign up. They're not really regularly sending anything out. What would be your advice on for what clients should do to make use of their newsletter that they have but aren't using?
Okay. So you actually have two different things there. The form, getting them to sign up for the form, enticing them to sign up. I always like to do some type of free opt-in offer, whether it's a video course or, you know, that you're sending out a course over 3 days or 3 weeks and you have a little video where you're teaching something in that session or in that series. Or you have a free PDF download. I mean, there's just so much you can do for that free opt-in offer. And if you don't send out regular emails, and I am just as guilty of this as everyone else because I do it for everybody else, but I don't do it for myself. Having that consistency so that people see you in their inbox all the time and they know you, even if they don't read the whole newsletter or if they only read the first couple of paragraphs, they're getting an idea of who you are. And so I hear a lot of, all of a sudden after 6 months of doing these newsletters, I hear clients say, after 6 months of doing these newsletters, now I'm getting sales. Now I'm getting people who are coming back to me time after time again because they're just at top of mind all the time. The clients are just, they're showing up, they're consistent, they're persistent. And so people translate that as how they're going to show up as a service provider or how their products are going to show up.
Yeah.
So did I answer your question?
Yeah. On my own website, we have, you know, a sign up box and then it's all automated. So, you know, once a week, my blog posts push out
right
all the subscribers. And, you know, I don't hear a lot of back from it. It's just something that happens, but it's every week the same time. And just in the past week, three different people have mentioned to me how much they value that newsletter. And it's so nice because you go for so long and you're like, does anybody even read this stuff? Am I just,
hello, is this mic on?
And then, you know, somebody pops in, you know, that I haven't heard from in 6 months. And they're like, you know, I'm a faithful reader of your blog and I really get a lot of value out of it. And so I think people need to maybe understand that also, even if they don't hear anything, it doesn't mean that people aren't paying attention.
Exactly. Exactly. Because people are super busy nowadays. Yeah. Yes. And you said something about automation. So having those, everything automated is so good. And you can also send out, just because you send out your blog doesn't mean that you shouldn't send out a newsletter or an update also. Now, if there's something, especially with WordPress, we have that thing coming up where Automatic's going to push out auto updates to older sites. Yeah. So your clients need to know about that in case they have older sites. And then when those sites get jacked up, they'll come to you to fix them.
So there you go. I love the automation piece. One reason that I converted so many clients from Constant Contact to MailChimp was because of the RSS feed. And then I was able to create a nice template for the RSS feed that kind of did the nice little thumbnail image with the on the left and the text on the right and the read more, and created really beautiful RSS feed templates for clients. And I try to encourage them to just put, not to create a newsletter, because I feel like when you're manually creating a newsletter, especially in one of those tools like MailChimp, it is so much time. It's hours and hours of work sometimes to do all that formatting and dealing with the editor. So I basically just tell them, write on your blog, put a featured image, and let that drive. Just have it happen automatically. And that's worked so successfully with a lot of nonprofits. Do you have any other advice just to make the newsletter task less onerous?
Hire me to do it for you. But hire someone.
That's so valuable. That's really, you know, you'd have to see, is it worth the ROI to have someone just put your newsletter together for you? Yep.
Well, and a lot of people do the excerpts, the blogs with the excerpts. So there's no reason why that can't be an RSS feed. But you will have times when you want to do something other than that. So don't shy away from doing that. Even though you send out something once a week, don't shy away from sending an important update. You know, and it just depends on how involved you want to get on your newsletter. You could send out a text newsletter. It doesn't have to be super beautiful. Just put your little logo at the bottom, like a signature line with your little logo. It doesn't have to be super beautiful. The more text, the easier it is to get through spam filters. So yeah, don't
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, because in the past, we certainly got carried away with some of our email templates. And I am seeing a trend now, at least with the newsletters I subscribe to. It's almost all text. It's just
plain text. Way to go. Especially, you know, if you want to get stay out of spam filters, a lot of times if there's too much HTML, they're just going to stick them right in there. So, you know, I'd make mine as simple as possible.
Well, the other thing, too, is with text, it is accessible. So a screen reader can read it. MailChimp is not natively accessible. So you have to be real careful for that. Also, we're going from a desktop size to a mobile size, which is half the size of the desktop email, right? And not everybody uploads images on a mobile device because they're worried about their data use. So images are sometimes can be great, and sometimes they can be superfluous. You know, you don't, if you're selling a product, you need images. If you're selling your services, you don't necessarily need a whole lot of image.
So let me ask you, oh, I'm sorry, Angela. Let me ask you this question as the MailChimp expert. I've been using MailChimp for many years, and I'm sorry if this is boring to people that don't want to hear about my personal questions about MailChimp. But I logged in and suddenly everything's all different. Yep. I can't create new lists.
Yep.
I'm only allowed to have one audience, but I currently have eight. So I don't know what's going on with that. Like, I can't create new automations. It's like, what happened to my MailChimp account?
So your MailChimp account should be okay because you're a legacy MailChimp account. You should be able to create new automations. You should be able to do everything that you used to be able to do. So you need to contact MailChimp. And if you're not paying for MailChimp, contact them via social media, either their Facebook page or Twitter page. You should have the same ability that you used to have. But they have changed. If you're a new user, they have changed a ton of how they run MailChimp. Now they're just not an email platform, they're a digital marketing platform. So they want to run your Facebook ads. They want to do your Google ad retargeting ads. They want to do your social media marketing. You can post to your social media accounts through MailChimp now. They want to do your email. They want to do your landing pages. Eventually, they will have websites. I mean, they're a digital marketing platform now.
Do you think that's going to be a good direction for them to go?
I'm conflicted because a lot of stuff that they did, like on the free accounts now, you cannot schedule a newsletter. What the heck, dude? Why? If you can't schedule a newsletter, why would you even have them? There's so many other services that you could have that will allow you to schedule a newsletter on a free account. So I think they slit their throats there. But MailChimp is one of the most forward-thinking software services that I've seen. They forced and pushed responsive email templates before anyone else. And they made it so that the end user didn't even feel any pain by their templates changing to responsiveness. So they were way, way, way ahead of the curve on that. So I think they're ahead of the curve on this. I think it's going to be a good thing, but there's a lot of growing pains with that. A lot of growing pains.
Especially for those of us who kind of sold our clients on MailChimp because of the free accounts. Now, we have to kind of figure out, well, what incentive do people have to sign up for MailChimp? Because that was incentive.
That's part of my issue is that it's like I can't legitimately tell people to sign up for a free email account with MailChimp because they can't schedule a newsletter. That's a huge issue.
And I have heard other people moving away from MailChimp. And for years, that was MailChimp.
That was the standard. Yeah.
And I'm still a little mad about it when they took away Mandrill, but, just a little bit.
That was the thing with me. It's like, hey, we're going to use Mandrill. And then they took that away. And then I sent everyone over to SendGrid. There was no possibility that they were going to all convert to paid Mandrill accounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you couldn't even use them if you weren't a paid MailChimp user. So it was, my rage was big on that one, but I've gotten over it. I'm mostly over it now. Well, but yeah, I mean, I was going to create a new list and it wouldn't let me create a new list unless I upgraded. And then I'd have to upgrade because I already had 8 lists. I would have to upgrade to a pretty significantly high level to get a 9th list. And I thought, they went from like allowing everything to allowing nothing. And I felt like it was a pretty steep, cutoff in your services.
Well, the reason why they did the list thing is because the logic behind it is you're doing different lists because you're doing segmentation for each of the lists. So they want you to do all that segmentation on a single list. They want you to look at groups and tags as your lists and the audience as your overall account. So I don't have any problems with the how they switch the audience. It's just a mind shift on how your logic's going to be. I've been sending people for free accounts over to MailerLite though.
I've been hearing about MailerLite. I was going to get an account and just try them out with a new list and see what I think.
Well, and the thing about it is the one thing that I look at religiously is their deliverability. And in 2018 and 2017, all of the stats said that MailerLite's deliverability was below or equal to MailChimp's. Well, at the beginning of this year, their deliverability shot up. So they're like number 2 right after ActiveCampaign.
That's amazing.
And MailChimp's number 4.
Wow. Wow. Who's number 3?
I don't remember. Oh, you know what? It was Constant Contact was in there. Constant Contact is like number two for the last 3 years. And I'm like, that's odd.
They're pretty strict though. They'll come down pretty hard on people with any sort of suspicious kind of list activities. So might be their IP addresses are more protected.
But so does MailChimp.
Yeah.
So it was just odd. I'm just not a big, huge fan of Constant Contact.
Neither am I. I know, because they're like you talk about MailChimp being a trendsetter and Constant Contact is more the anti-trendsetter.
Yes.
It's like the Windows and Mac. PC, are you a PC?
Well, and I appreciate what you said about lists versus groups, because that's something I've been counseling people on for a few years now, especially since when you want to send an email, you can only send it to, you send it to one list or, you know, the group. But if you have people in multiple lists and you want to send it to multiple lists, they're going to get the email twice.
Yes. And that's part of the reason why they did what they did.
That groups are actually your lists. And that is a mental thing that's hard. So I've actually gone through and exported everyone's contacts out, fixed it all up, and then re-imported them in. So it would be one list with groups. And
yes. Yeah, that's how you have to do it.
Good. Time alone with my spreadsheets is always time well spent.
I'm speaking sorry, of I'm nerd. Not sending out emails, I think the last email I sent out, this is really going to mean that I haven't done one in a long time, was on GDPR. And
oh, wow.
And I got a ton of response. You know, like I thought, is anyone listening to this stuff? And I had like 25 people write me back and like, oh my gosh, thank you for writing this amazing email that I should probably put on my blog about GDPR. And one thing that it made me do is I had a pop-up for my mail list sign up on my website that was exit intent. And of course that's tracked, then like not show the pop-up for a while, which is tracked by a cookie. And I ended up in this kind of catch 22 of like my pop-up, not really itself by setting a cookie, not being GDPR compliant, even though my list itself sign up thing was.
Okay. I do have a question about the services that you're offering for your clients in regards to their newsletters. Are you just creating like the templates and the sending? Are you actually writing the content as well?
Yes. All of that. I can do all of it. Most people write their own content because they want it to be from them. But I can do all of it.
And so when you're tasked with writing the content, what's your process? How do you manage that?
People will give me an outline. I'll write to that outline and then I send it back to them and they make it sound like their own and then they send it back to me.
Okay. And you can like write about any topic, you can just figure it out and write?
Well, I usually talk to the people about it and then they send me the outline. And if I do need to do some research, I do, but usually it's not that involved. It's more like, oh, hey, we're going to have this event. So you have to write around the event. People just want to send, here's the bullet points. And then you have to fill in the fluff. It's not like you're writing a blog post. So it's just, yeah, it's just bullet points usually.
Prior to this, did you do any kind of, you know, professional writing of any kind that made this an easy transition for you?
No. Like, I wasn't like a journalist or anything like that. I just started writing blog posts. So, and I wrote for Neil Schaefer. So it used to be Maximize Social Business, but now he has it on Neil Schaefer and he's like a big, social media guy. So I wrote there on email and social media. And then I write my own blog posts. And then I write blog posts for for clients too. But other than that, no.
It sounds like you have writing skills though. So it's not like
I read a ton. Yeah. And it's funny because My husband and I were talking about this the other day. My daughter-in-law is like this English, she's like this English savant. So she can outline a sentence, like you say where the adjective and the pronoun. And I never can do that. But anybody who's ever edited my writing says I'm a good writer. So I'm like, it's just because I read a lot.
Yeah, I think being a good reader is the place to start with that. Did you take any classes in college or anything, liberal arts or anything just like that?
Regular English classes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good advice for anyone who wants to be a good writer. Just read a lot and you'll get it.
Well, and my son is, when he was a kid, he wanted to be a writer, but he wanted to write fiction. I always get nonfiction and fiction. So he wanted to write fiction, and we outlined a whole world for him. And he's 12 and we're building this world. And we went back and forth to be able to build it. I kept on asking him questions. And what about this? And what about this? So we had this whole world built for his writing. He's a brilliant writer, but he doesn't write anymore. He does other stuff because he has kids now. You know how that is. But no, I'm a voracious reader. I always have 3 books going at the same time. And I read like probably 50, 60 books a year. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I want your reading list.
You need a
book. I read weird books.
Yeah. When you're doing, going to WordCamps, do you ever speak?
I do. I've spoken.
What's your favorite thing to speak about?
Email. Of course. I spoke at Orange County this year. I spoke at Santa Clarita this year. I'm going to go to Sacramento and speak at Sacramento this year on drip campaigns. Because a good drip campaign is worth $1 million.
So tell me, like, explain to anybody who doesn't know, what is a drip campaign and why is it beneficial?
Oh, you should always have a drip campaign to go with your free opt-in offer. It's just educating your readers over time, a little tiny bit at a time. Drip, drip, drip. You just drip a little bit of information on them. It's also called a nurture series. So you don't overwhelm them. They have a tendency to read them all, and you make it the length of your drip campaign, the length of your sales cycle. And it gives people that those additional touches, like the rule of thumb is people need 7 touches before they purchase from you. So you get those in your drip campaign, and then people at the end, the object of the end is to sell them on whatever, however they came into the drip campaign. So it's brilliant. Everyone should have one that goes with their free opt-in offer.
And do you do those like an automated, you have them all set up in advance? And so they're just something that just starts automatically. Okay. I do a lot of automation series, but they're mostly educational for my clients on, you know, in regard to onboarding and all our different processes. So that's something.
Those are drip campaigns.
Okay. Well, I need to set up some for my opt-in offer for my newsletter, other than just sending them my newsletter every week.
You know, Amy, yeah. I know you do SEO, don't you, Amy?
I do. I just do on, oh, that Amy.
No,
sorry.
Amy.
Which
no,
Amy?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're both Amy's. Yeah,
Amy Masson. You do SEO stuff for your clients, right?
Yes.
So yeah, you could do a little SEO drip campaign on just best SEO practices. And even though there's 1 million of those out there, it's interesting how, you know, you're the person they found. So you're the person to offer it to them.
Well, and checklists. I have a million posts on that, so.
Yeah, and checklists. Send out a checklist, an SEO checklist. That way, they print it up, keep it there. Then when they need you, they go to the checklist and get your information.
So when you're, what, in your experience, what type of email, like when you're sending out just an email versus like a blog post or a newsletter or a checklist, what gets the best response?
Oh, it's funny. I just read an article about this morning. So if you send out an email about something that people have purchased from you or something that they just contacted you about, those are the ones that are going to get the most opens. Order emails, when people order something, they have a 97% open rate. I was like, no, because I don't open my order emails, but okay, yeah, I guess that could be true. So you have to think about, those are something that people did and they want that information back from you. So you're probably, your drip campaign with your process that people go to through when they sign up with you, you probably have a super high open rate, right? Because people are super interested. They paid you money, so they want to know what's next. So it's just, you have to look at, when can you capture their attention? And it's honestly, it's not going to be a newsletter unless they're wondering about the topic of your newsletter. So yeah, sorry. And SEO is going to be a hot topic. People are going to be a hot topic about SEO.
Oh, for sure. I think I probably get more questions about that than anything else.
Especially when there's algorithm updates, you know?
Yeah. And that's where you go to get all of your newsletter topics. What questions did you just get? So when I send out emails with tutorials, I get more opens because it has a tutorial in it. And some tutorials never get opened by some people because they don't care about that tutorial. But I'm sure they're saving them.
So
that's what I would do.
So you're the MailChimp lady, but what else do you do outside of MailChimp?
I do also WordPress design and build, which I really like. Instead of designing and building, I really like going in and helping people get their free opt-in offer created, figure out what their free opt-in offer is, put their subscription forms on their site if they don't already have subscription forms, which I'm finding people, a lot of people don't have subscription forms, and getting that whole sequence. How are you going to deal with the sequence? How are you going to send out the free opt-in offer? What are you going to do after the free opt-in offer? How are you going to get people from signing up on your site to purchasing? So going through that whole strategy, because there's a lot of strategy there. But yeah, I like to work on sites too, but not.
It seems like we could all channel you if we're people who work with clients and build websites. Like, I'm probably just focused on getting the site built, and I work with a designer, so I'm trying to get the pixel perfect, you know, implementation of the design I've been handed. But I think we all need the Amy Hall, like getting that call to action and that conversion path. And what are we doing here anyway?
Yeah.
What are people going to do on your site when they get there anyway? And that seems, yes, like sometimes that's the afterthought, you know?
Exactly. And it should be the first thought. Sorry.
Yeah.
Should be the first thought. And people just don't think about that. People want to put all sorts of stuff on their site because they think it's important. It's not. Just answer their questions.
Well, and one of the things I think I always try to tell people is, like, you need to understand that when people land on your website, they're probably only going to do one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want that one thing to be? So I know you have, they all want them to do, I want them to do this and this and this. I'm like, well, they're not going to. They're not going to. Most people aren't. So pick one and let's make it the focus. And I think a lesson that I wish people would actually listen to me on, because most of the time they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Oh, I can tell you all sorts of email template horror stories now. Because that's the same thing with email templates, you know, or email newsletters. Don't put 12 things in your newsletter. Put one.
Unless it's newsletters. My kid's newsletter, I'm not reading it all.
Well, yes. Yes. I don't have that issue anymore, but put it at the top. They're going to read what's at the top. At the bottom, you contact your social media. Those buttons never get clicked. Things never get forwarded the way it's supposed to be forwarded. So yeah, don't worry. Just put one thing in there. That's super good.
So I had one final question, which is that I realize you might be a little bit older than me, and yeah, I am. I'll be 51 this year, and just kind of coming over that threshold of turning 50. Like, I felt pretty great turning 40, turning 50. I feel like I'm more on my game than I've been ever. Like, I feel like I'm sharper. I'm more aware. My skills are really honed. I'm quick, you know, with stuff. And, but yet there's that fear of being seen as irrelevant or not, you know, not as respected. And I was wondering what your feelings were about that.
So, as far as clients go, I think clients in some ways, they're better with that. When I tell them, oh, my grandkids are this or that. I have a lot of, oh, that's awesome. And for the most part, my clients listen to me on my opinions, and they understand when I say this or that, they get it. They get the point, and they'll go with it. So I don't see it as really hard with the clients. And I do have older clients. It seems like my clients are late 30s up. I don't have younger clients. But where I see there like is an issue is more, and I don't know if that's the right word, issue. I just think it's a little bit more challenging is that, like, as a WordCamp speaker, you go to the speaker dinner and certain people, and I don't mean like this person or that person, it's just people just don't talk to you as a woman. And then people just don't really talk to you as an older woman. And I'm introverted when I go to situations like that. I'm lucky I have friends that are not, so they take me around. But I just don't feel comfortable like walking up to people. So I just think that's a little bit harder to deal with, is dealing with the male dominant industry that we have, and then male dominant, or then the females that are in the industry, they're a little bit younger. And so I think, you know, we kind of get the dregs, like, they'll go to the men first and they'll go to the younger females and they come to us. So
maybe as a community, we could do better at, you know, just putting the word out, hey, younger people and men. And, you know, I do think you're right, because there's certainly a lot of older men in the space and they get plenty of attention to take notice of that.
There's a lot of men our age. Yeah.
Yeah. Take notice of that woman and go talk to her. And she's probably got a wealth of knowledge.
Well, yeah. And I just think it's so hard. Just as a human, you have a tendency to judge just by looking at somebody. Just know if somebody's a WordCamp speaker or if somebody's a meetup organizer, they do have knowledge. They're going to have some knowledge, and just go to and talk to them instead of just giving them the eyeball.
Do you feel like there's like an age range where if you're below that, you're not taken seriously, and if you're above that, you're not taken seriously? And what do you think that age range is?
Okay, so I'm guilty of this. I'm totally guilty of this. If you're in your mid 20s, like the kids that talk, like the kids that talk out at work camps, I totally go to their talks because they're kids and they need to be supported, right? But if you're young 20s, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to support you because I just don't think you have that life experience to get you through what I need to get through. And I'm so guilty of that. And I should not do that because that doesn't mean that it's not true. Everybody can have life experiences. So, I think it's looks. When you look at somebody who's on their, you can judge somebody like they're on their game. They look good. They looked active. But I'm a little frumpy. Okay, I'm fat. So I think, yeah, people look at me like, oh, she's fat. She doesn't really know what she's talking about. She's not attractive. So there you go.
Tell you as, you know, a person who also struggles with weight and have my entire life, my weight varies dramatically all the time. So, you know, when I am at a heavier weight, I feel more invisible and I feel like people ignore me more. They don't make eye contact with me. And then I feel it less when I lose weight and I'm at a lower weight. And I think that's not something that men really have to deal with.
Yeah, that's true.
Say that. Yeah.
I think that's very true.
I spoke this summer at WordCamp Denver and I've put on a lot of weight this last 6 months because of some health stuff. And I just felt so self-conscious. I mean, that was the thing that obsessed my mind more than my talk. What am I going to wear? How am I going to look? And then someone takes a photograph of me from underneath the chin at a bad angle and posts it on Twitter. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, please. But, you know, it's like the age, the weight, like it weighed on me in this oppressive psychological way that I just had to keep working with myself to get over. And like, I need to focus on my message. And I do see some people who are powering through and I just admire them. And I'm like, are they having the same experience I am? You know, and maybe we're all just faking it like, oh no, I feel fine about myself standing up here looking like this. But Yeah.
I think it could be that, you know, everything is just in my mind because I never had any issues with weight until I had a hysterectomy. Then I had cervical and uterine cancer. Luckily it was gone with a hysterectomy. So after that, then I ballooned up and I don't feel good about myself. And so yes, the clothes, you have to have the certain clothes, the hair. Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And so I think a lot of it could be just me not being open. I mean, if you stand there with a grumpy face, who's going to walk up to you with a grumpy face? And yeah, I might have a grumpy face on a lot.
Are you the women in WP grumpy cat?
I hope not.
So let me ask one last question. What is the number one biggest mistake people make in their newsletters?
Too much. Honestly, too much. Oh, and small print. I just dealt with this with a client. They wanted 12-point font. And I'm like, I can't do that. I did it because that's what they wanted. But I was like, it's not going to get read. It's not going to get read. Especially on a mobile device. It's not going to get read. People are looking at this mobile device in the toilet at the movie theater. There is no light in the toilet at the movie theater, right? That's when they're reading your newsletter. They're reading it in the grocery store line. You know, when they don't have anything to do, they're reading it across the table from their loved ones on a romantic date. So.
I do want to ask, like, you know, since we're the Women in WP podcast, for women who are interested in doing what you're doing and doing email marketing and the kind of work that you're doing, but also just getting involved with WordPress. What do you feel like has been the most, I mean, you mentioned WordCamps as the most helpful and,
yeah,
and meetups. Is there anything else you would recommend to people in terms of resources that would help them to level up?
Twitter.
Okay.
Honestly, go find a list. Bridget Willard has a bunch of lists, like women in WordPress lists. Go find one of those lists and follow all of those people. Twitter is a wealth of resources. And just listen and be open and just soak everything up like a sponge.
And the women in WP do have a list. So if you come to our Twitter, you can find a list of other women in WP to follow.
Very so nice.
It has been great, Amy, having you here. I love talking to other Amys.
Yes, it's a good name.
Before we go, if you want to let everybody know how they can find you online.
My website is amyhall.biz, because .com was already taken. And my email address is amy@amyhall.biz.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Thank you for listening. Want to be on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter and join our Facebook group. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes.